Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kerry Stevenson, and today I'm speaking with Chris Bergstresser. He is Executive Director of Moggle Group. ASX code is ESH. Now, this is all about video games and that online market and that sort of esports and all this stuff that you all know. It's not something that I understand too much about, but here's what I do know. Massive, massive growing market. Now, Moggle have been flying a little bit under the radar. They're making some changes. It's a really interesting time in the development of the company. So sit up and take some notice and welcome Chris to Small Caps. Good to see you, Chris. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the time.
Well, let's start because this is the first time you and I we've introduced you to our Small Caps audience, which is an investor audience. Give us an overview of who are Moggle? Because you joined as executive director on the 1st of November last year, talking to you almost right. The 1st of April. So it's not been that long, 6 months. So tell us an overview of the company.
Well, as some of you may already know, Moggle did start out as an esports tournament platform. Of course, through the pandemic and just giving you a little bit of my background, I do know the esports space reasonably well. I was with Modern Times Group, who owned ESL, the largest esports company in the world until very recently. And even with them over the pandemic, they had a very rough time, as did Moggle. That growth in games didn't translate to growth in esports, certainly not in revenue. And I think the team at Moggle rightfully took a step back to see where and how they could pivot. They did look to the Nordics to see, and they saw how Stillfront, Embracer, EG7, who I was a part of, MTG, and so on, evolved to start consolidating in the game space, looking at ways to drive innovation to be more competitive. And they took a bit of time to think about what that thesis might be. It's when they contacted me, early summer last year, and we had a conversation about what their thesis is. Did a little bit of refinement, and they asked me to join as a board director. And then we really started focusing on what that pivot would look like, refining the thesis and what the business plan is. And now we have pivoted to being a company that is focused on the buy and build model, which, again, you've seen with Embracer and Stillfront. But I would say the big difference with us is that we are focusing on those operational synergies as one. So for example, centralized finance, centralized legal, collective bargaining on server infrastructure to where you're saving costs, where group companies are saving costs, collective bargaining on software licenses for development tools like Unity, Unreal, and which all, again, will save costs. And a lot of entrepreneurs want that in joining part of a larger group. So now we've been, as you said, we have been flying under the radar because we wanted to refine the thesis, wanted to refine the business plan, start our outreach to targets, get those conversations going, starting to execute on that, and then slowly but surely start talking to the marketplace again, because we didn't want to just sort of jump in and say, we've pivoted, here it is. We wanted execution behind it before we start talking about it.
When you had to make that challenge, I guess before that, what was it that attracted you? Because you've got a massive background in games and in this sort of this online entrepreneurial gaming industry. What was it about Moggle that attracted you the most? Because it's, as you said right at the beginning, it had some challenges. What could you see that you could do to help the company?
Well, I would say first off is that they had a similar idea. They really did take time to look at what worked and what didn't work in the buy and build market. And you know, what's worked is buying profitable companies and driving EBITDA arbitrage. Where it hasn't worked is in the build part. And the build part is where you actually, as I had discussed before, where those operational synergies are, that's one. Two is then reinvesting into those group companies to help drive organic growth in a more, in a lower risk, more measured manner. And you haven't really seen that with the likes of Embracer or Stillfront. And so I was surprised to see that they had a strong understanding of this. And it's something that I had been struggling with, having been in the middle of it. And so, again, not jumping into it immediately, we took actually a few months before I said yes to joining the board so we could really see if we are on the same page of how we would want to approach this. And then B, joining the board, taking more of an active role in how we're looking at, let's say, refining the thesis, refining the business plan, and then starting to execute a bit on that, and even building a team behind that. So this is what sort of led me into it. But I would say last but not least is the fact that Mogul is, the share price is quite low, but that is a huge attractor to our targets. You know, for me, looking at it pragmatically, from what gives us a competitive advantage outside of, hey, we're doing operational stuff better than others, is the fact that entrepreneurs coming in now are going to have tremendous upside going forward. And I can say the same for investors as well. I was just going to say it's the real attractor for me is the fact that it is a perfect opportunity to do buy and build correctly.
Why hasn't it been done correctly in the past? So what is it about? It's a very fragmented sector.
It is in a sense. I would say, and I don't mean this, you know, and I'm not trying to be disparaging to my friends at Stillfront, Embracer, EG7, and so on. But they are more or less run by bankers. And I'm not saying they aren't focused on product. Each of the group companies they have in there have phenomenal entrepreneurs, but they're not finding ways to really collaborate with one another. Whereas with Mogul, the team that has been built there since I joined comes from a background of games operations. So although, yes, we have to focus on the investor side, and I think that's where a lot of the board comes in and really helps on that front. And certainly I have my experience with investors, but where the magic happens is in how it's executed and how operationally we can bring all those components together and really make them work for the betterment of the other and the group as a whole.
So just getting my head around this a little bit, is Mogul like the mothership? In other words, it's you talk about a buy and build strategy. Yeah. Are you saying we'll have the group structure? We've got your back. Come to mother. Yeah. And we'll sort you all out, and you go and do what you do best, which is build that platform.
Yes, I in a sense, I guess that's a good way to put it. I mean, you could almost look at it like a mothership services, right? So there's a financial services, of course, where we're investing or we're either acquiring other group companies, or maybe some of the group companies find a technology company they want to roll up. So there's that component of it. And like I said, with the other services side of, you know, legal, finance, server licenses, software licenses, these sorts of things that we can help manage so that these entrepreneurs can focus on what they do best, which is creating great games. I would say that's how you can look at it, not a mothership and sort of a Borg collective, per se, but a mothership that's going to, help really drive the success of each individual group company, and keeping in mind that those group companies will continue to maintain reasonable operation independence, certainly in how they're driving their product, where they're investing, and so on. And of course, we're going to have financial oversight, and we'll assist them in any way we can, but we want to let them to do what they do best. They make great games. They know how to drive their business better than we do. A lot of these companies that we're talking to have years of driving growth in not only revenue, but profit as well. So let them do what they do best.
So why do they need you if they are good at doing that part of it? What do they need from you?
Well, in this marketplace, it's becoming much more competitive, much more difficult to invest in new innovations when you have to focus on, you know, some companies have one product that's driving a lot of revenue, and they can't take the time out to really then invest a massive amount in a new product. It's a big risk. That's one. Another one is resource. It's so competitive for resources and these sorts of things. And so what many entrepreneurs, and keeping again, you know, they're a couple. They're the ones that just want an exit and they want to go live on their sandy beach somewhere, and more power to them. But those aren't the people we're interested in. We're interested in the ones that see a much bigger version of themselves in the future, where they can leverage a group structure like that to save costs on legal, finance, or servers or software and these sorts of things, get investment without having to spend a lot of time going out to investors to say, hey, we want to raise a few million in capital in a Series A or whatever. This way, they're spreading the risk amongst a lot of different other companies. There's the potential to share resource across all the group companies, to where that reduces risk in them having to go out and finding additional engineers and these sorts of things. So there are entrepreneurs out there that, and quite a few of them, that really see a benefit in this, let's call it group structure. Last but not least is you know, certainly that financial upside they could see long term, and realizing that massive growth of their company in a publicly listed entity. So there are a lot of different reasons.
I'm talking to you with a Californian accent, sitting in London. I'm here in Australia. Where are these people? Where are these companies? Where are you looking? And you're listed on the ASX as well. So I guess my audience is going to be scratching their heads going, hang on a minute, American company, American accent, sitting in London, talking about Sweden and Finland. Is it borderless?
No, it's, well, that's the thing about the games industry, and especially through, you know, what's been innovative about the games industry is that it has been borderless, very borderless. You've always had you know, big companies like Electronic Arts utilizing developers from all over the world. But I would say that's gone to the nth extreme with these really incredible Finnish game companies like Supercell that would just utilize top talent from wherever they could get it, because they were based in Helsinki. And I wouldn't say there are tons of people who would want to go and live in Helsinki, especially in the middle of winter. And so I would say the games industry has been an industry of finding the best where we can. And certainly through the pandemic, even the companies have even evolved to embrace even more remote work. You're even starting to see a lot of companies that don't really have offices anymore that are doing phenomenally well because everyone's working remotely. And I'm not saying that's what we're doing, but that allows us to look at companies in Australia, look at companies potentially in Southeast Asia. We're certainly talking to companies in Australia, companies in Latin America, companies in North America, a lot of companies in Europe that are very interesting. And so I would say that's the one beauty about the games industry, is that we've always been an industry to embrace top talent wherever we can find it in this world.
Do you think the industry where Mogul is coming in is, I guess, structuring a little bit more, because it's quite you know, they're artists and they're gamers and they're out there doing what they do best. Do you think that you're coming in at a really good time? I guess, you know, I spoke about the mothership earlier, but to put some structure around these companies and to bring them together under your banner and say, listen, we got your back. You go do what you do. So is this the first time that this has happened? And is it necessary to do this? Is there an opportunity?
Well, no, there's a big opportunity, but it's not the first time it's been done. I mean, like I've said before, you know, you've seen this, you know, whether it's the ones in the Nordic who have been really innovative in this space of buying profitable companies and bringing them in and living under that banner. And certainly you've even seen it with Tencent in China. I would say the big difference and where the opportunity lies. So the problem with the market in the past is that it's been focused on buy. The build part, and you know, maybe some of the bankers with the other companies would argue with me that EBIT arbitrage is building, but I would argue that it's not, coming from an operational background. What most entrepreneurs out there want is they want that ability to focus more and more and more and more on product and not have the externalities of some of these other things. They want some of these administrative things, as you've called it before, off their plate to a large degree, so they can reinvest into innovation in games. They do like the sharing of knowledge. They do like the sharing of resources. They do like ultimately the sharing of tools. And so the opportunity is bringing that together and delivering on that promise of the operational synergies, on the reinvestment into the companies to drive their own growth while maintaining operational independence, you know, keeping their culture, keeping their working methodologies.
Righto, let's get into some numbers here now, Chris. You've got quite a low share, but about market cap of about 8 mil. What's your cash? Mm-hmm. How are you going to buy these companies and create, I guess, invest? Give us the investment thesis. Where are you at?
Well, the investment thesis is, you know, of course, every transaction is bespoke, but you're going to look at it as a combination of cash and shares. And of course, because we don't have a lot of cash now, we are looking at creative ways to conserve cash and potentially maximize some of the shares there. And certainly the companies we're talking to are seeing the upside at the low share price, and then the roadmap ahead on companies we're potentially targeting, companies we may or may not be in conversation with at this time. And so they see that while the share is at, you know, what is it, 0.005 cents right now, that, you know, say a year in the future, it could be, you know, 20 times that or more. I mean, if you look at, for example, and you see this in the marketplace. So if I can say this from experience, from having been at ENAD Global 7 or EG7, which was called Toadman Interactive before. When I first joined, the share price was, I think, at about 10 Swedish kroner. So let's call it, what would that be, about 1 euro per share. And after about 5 transactions over a year or so, we got it up to 130 Swedish kroner, so more or less 13 euro per share. But that was kind of the growth trajectory that investors got excited about bringing in. It wasn't just the companies and the revenue and EBITDA that we were bringing into our balance sheet, but it was also some of the product that we were bringing in. I mean, one of the companies we acquired has a game called EverQuest, which is one of the most famous massively multiplayer games ever. It's iconic. So these sorts of things are what certainly excited investors in Sweden at that time. So there's a similar, we know that there is a similar model that we would bring to Mogul. But I would say this time, from day one, that focus on how we're going to reinvest, how we're building those operational synergies, is paramount to that longer term growth, because we don't want those that certainly we want the short term growth components of revenue and EBITDA, but we also want investors to be very confident in the future that we are focused on driving organic growth, and it's not just going to be Embracer buying 30 companies at one time, you know, over a year, and then having hundreds of companies as group companies. We just don't think that that is a sustainable model going forward. They need growth.
They do need growth. Now, we're running out of time, Chris. We're going to to chat to you again in a short period of time, because I think, you know, you're a guy on a mission and you want to grow and build, as you said before, buy and build strategy. So everyone knows I love to end my conversations with, look, my investor audience wants to know why they should be sitting up and taking notice of Mogul right now. So give me three reasons, not four, just three.
Three, okay. So number one, I would say it's our approach to buy and build. I would say that certainly from my perspective, we've had enough in the marketplace to see what worked, what hasn't worked. And I think, especially speaking with a lot of entrepreneurs, we have a model in place that's unique. Second is that it's a team there of people who come from operational backgrounds within games. It's not just bankers. It's people who have games backgrounds, who've worked on product, who've worked on the business side, and have practical knowledge. And I would say third is we've been flying under the radar for a while. And the reason being is that we wanted to take our time in formulating the thesis, building the right kind of business plan, being able to execute to some degree before we start going out into the market and talking to people about what we're up to. You know, this is the important part, is being able to show the execution on it. So now it's time.
Now it's time indeed. Well, Chris, it's been absolutely delightful to chat to you today with Small Caps.
Thank you.
It's a massive market, ladies and gentlemen, and they're taking it by the bootstraps, making some changes and building up and creating, well, I call it the mothership, but it's going to be a very, very interesting time. So, ladies, if you'd like to find out more, now the website is a little bit more interesting, so I'm going to read this out. Its website is ESH, which is the code, ASX code, dot mogul.gg. So ESH.mogul.gg. Go check them out there. ASX code ESH. Chris Bergstresser, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, and have a wonderful day.